Welcome to Think Big with Dan and Qasim. Join host Dan Melnick and Qasim Masood as they explore big ideas, limitless possibilities, and engage with visionaries, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders who dare to dream big. Get inspired, motivated, and find practical tips for personal growth. Think big, dream bigger, and ignite your potential.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. Guest today, Isabel Washington. Isabel, thank you for being here. I really appreciate you coming on. And can you tell us, first of all, where you're calling in from and what you do for a living with Laurels?
Yes, I'm in LA and I'm the founder and CEO of Laurels.
Amazing. Yeah. So obviously just checking out the website. I got a pretty good idea of what this is, but can you tell me a little bit more about your background leading up to, like, what made you want to get into this space? And what did you kind of notice out there in the market that was maybe lacking, or, you know, something you're looking to do a little bit differently with your brand?
Yeah, definitely. So I was at McKinsey, the consulting firm, for 2 years. I did a lot of work, you know, kind of across industries as McKinsey consultants do. And I took a keen liking to consumer goods. I'm a mass consumer myself. I love beverages, food. I feel like I'm on top of a lot of the trends. And I really watched Poppy, you know, kind of grow up and blow up into what it really is now, and how a lot of people had kind of found a new love or opportunity to drink soda again. I was one of many Gen Zers who, you know, kind of swore off coffee, not coffee, it's kind of swore off soda early and was like, I'm just going to drink sparkling water for the rest of my life. So it wasn't really until, you know, both Poppy and Olipop kind of created something that was, you know, better for you than soda, both from a caloric perspective, but also like the prebiotic benefits that they're about. And I was kind of looking at the marketplace and I saw there wasn't really anything like it in the coffee space. There's obviously, you know, Starbucks and Dunkin' that, you know, 350, 400 calories, pump full, over 40 grams of sugar, but they're super good. And they're category leaders because they're super good. Despite it not being something you probably should drink every day, people do. And, you know, kind of on the flip side, especially living in LA where there's Erewhon, I have an Erewhon membership, so I'm there pretty regularly. Everything kind of in the coffee section that's like a better for you product raves about, you know, it's zero this, zero that, zero sugar, non-dairy, no this. And they honestly just don't taste good. Like, it's really not kind of throwing shade at, you know, other canned coffee companies, because they're all doing their thing for good reason. But I didn't feel like there was anything that, you know, you go to sleep and you're like looking forward to waking up. You're not going to snooze your alarm because you have a canned coffee in the fridge. I just didn't feel like anything existed. I felt that the canned coffee section had done a lot on the convenience side. You know, like it's on the go. You're in a rush. You don't have time to go to a coffee shop. You're looking for a quick source of energy, but not ever like, you know, someone who's drinking canned coffee might actually want it to taste good and not just be good enough. So I really wanted to kind of set out and build something that I felt was not for convenience. Like it was really something that you're going to buy. It's bringing those incremental, you know, shoppers into the coffee aisle who are like, I don't drink canned coffee because it's not good. Bringing them in because it actually does, you know, taste good and fulfill a need.
You know, it's amazing. And tell me a little bit more about the product as well. I mean, I was obviously taking a look at the website and what I could see on there briefly. So I see this mention of A2 dairy. Can you tell me a little bit more about what that is? That's not something that I've heard before. I mean, I've heard a lot of things from a lot of brands that come on the podcast and just what you see out there of the zero everything and all that kind of stuff like you mentioned. Yeah. But this is something new. I've not heard of this. So can you tell me a little bit more about what that means exactly?
Yeah. So what I always like to say is that oftentimes people have not heard of A2 dairy. They've heard of Alex Ice Cream, which is a large ice cream brand, and they actually use A2 dairy in their formula. And they were kind of like the first mass consumer product to use A2 dairy. So A2 refers to a specific beta-casein protein that is in all mammals' milk, including humans. So it's a digestible protein. It's why people are able to break down milk. When cows started being commercially produced, like in mass, to kind of support, you know, the bustling capital infrastructure we have in this country, a genetic mutation happened, which is called an A1 protein, which is nicknamed, you know, it not digestible protein. So humans actually can't break that down. And oftentimes, like recent studies are showing that when people are allergic or have dairy sensitivities or are lactose intolerant, that it's not actually the lactose that's causing the issue. It's this A1 protein. So Alec, actually from Alex Ice Cream, kind of taught me this comparison where he was like, it's pretty much if people have like brown hair or blonde hair. It's really comes to genetics. It tastes different. It's from cows. It has lactose. It's all the same things, but it's of a specific gene that gets passed through their milk that makes it difficult for consumption. So A2 is free of that inflammatory protein.
That's really fascinating. I can't believe this is the first time I'm hearing about this, because I feel like it's something that's so important, and people search for like functionality in their food and drink these days. It's like, it seems to be a big one. So that's very cool. And I guess I'd be curious too. Obviously, I was taking a look at the website too. So you're taking pre-orders right now. Super exciting. So I guess I'm just curious, you know, your general go-to-market strategy obviously seems to be, you know, more on the D2C side, at least in the beginning. Is that kind of where you feel like your like ideal customers are going to land, and what your kind of lane is going to be for the foreseeable future with this product?
Yeah. So I think what's interesting about beverage specifically is that, well, it's actually not interesting, but it's incredibly hard to ship because it's super, super heavy. So what I wanted to do, myself and one of my friends who I started the company with, we were really focused on not having to ship a ton of products because it is super heavy, but we are bootstrapping it. We have a few friends and family investors, but we're not sitting on like boatloads of cash. So it was really a way for us to almost validate the idea. Like, is this something that people would want? Is this getting interest? We've posted, you know, a few things on Instagram, a few things on TikTok. We've played a bit around with paid ads on Facebook just to really see, you know, beyond my parents and his parents and a few of our friends, like, is this something that people will want? And it was a way to generate cash flow, like, honestly, initially, because we've been able to get a few thousand dollars in cash purely through pre-orders. That is not, you know, critical to running this business or getting the product off the ground, but it has been a really nice way to go out to those angel investors or to like kind of get a story going that have been able to like bring a few more people on board. And I think just kind of have a little bit more of a proof of concept, because, you know, not only do we have a product, a website, like a Shopify theme is like $500. Anyone can build a website, but we are getting people, you know, ordering, which has been really great and kind of helped me sleep at night for investing, you know, my life savings into this company. So I think that was kind of the D2C play. I don't really see it being a large part of our go-to-market strategy because, you know, shipping 4 cans across the country is over $10. Like, it's just not really a way. As a consumer, I'm not going to buy $20 coffee and also pay another $10 for shipping. It's just not super feasible. And the margins just aren't really there. Like, there's no way for us to really support that long term unless we figured out like some massive shipping hacks. So our go-to-market strategy largely is focusing really deep in LA, because I feel like if you can't win in LA, where people are, you know, at the forefront of health, at the forefront of caring about all these things, it's going to be really difficult to bring that to another market. So we're focusing very heavily, you know, on the Erewhon, the Bristol Farms, the Gelson's, and a lot of those kind of specialty and independent stores, and not focusing, you know, I don't want to have a company who's reliant on paid ads. There's a lot paid there. But I've seen a lot of people, you know, I went to USC and it's bred a ton of entrepreneurial brands, including, you know, like Saws, Good Girl Snacks / like Hot Girl Pickles. Like, they were in my year. And I've seen how they've been able to grow a brand organically without relying a lot on that. So I'm not hoping to make it part of our strategy. And I think that, you know, a lot of our branding, like, is super cute. Our website's cute. I think that we have a really great product. So I think that there's a lot to be done by, you know, getting cans in hands and meeting people.
Yeah, no, I think it's a great perspective. And I love chatting with people that are kind of on the stage of growth that you are with your brand. But getting off the ground stage is, I think, where a lot of people can abandon their like ideas and passions, what they're trying to do. And it can be really difficult. But I think your perspective is really important to kind of have this proof of concept before you go into conversations with investors or distributors or retailers. It can be really difficult to go into those conversations with not a lot to show. And even doing something like you've done with, you know, maybe a few $1,000 in pre-order sales, it can go a long way in those conversations. I think a lot of folks try to go into retail right away. And, you know, even if you get a deal, it's probably going to be a bad deal because, one, you don't know because you haven't been there, but also you don't really have anything to show, right? So I think it's really important for anybody listening. We have a lot of other entrepreneurs that listen or people that are looking to get into their first kind of entrepreneurial venture in the CPG space, it seems. And so your perspective is super value there. I appreciate you sharing that. And yeah, I guess so.
I mean, it's hard. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, please. Yeah. No.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's exactly right. There were many times where, you know, I thought about shutting down the company. It's, you have a COGS scare, or you get a quote back and you're like, how are we ever going to pay for this? Or you're kind of looking at pricing or the market. And every time, you know, I'm sure you've seen Snackshot or familiar, like BevNet, like anytime one of those guys post an article about a new coffee company, I'm scared it's going to be doing something similar to what we're doing. So I think that there's a lot of times where it's really difficult to get to market, and the little things add up. whether it's, you know, the small fees, or it can end up costing a lot more than you'd bargained for initially. But I think that my biggest kind of takeaway or lesson was that you can oftentimes do things a lot cheaper or a lot smaller scale than you would need to like prove a concept. There's a lot of ways, for example, you know, when I was kind of looking for a formulator, there were formulators who wanted, you know, 15,000 for one SKU and then 9,000 for the next. And, you know, that's a ton of money. We paid less than that for three SKUs. So I think it's just a matter of, you know, not kind of letting these little seemingly setbacks get in the way of launching something great. There's a lot of things that I wish we could spend a lot more money on. Like, you know, I wish we had the money to launch huge marketing campaigns and social and activations and all of these really cool things that a lot of brands are, who are venture backed, have a lot of capacity to do, and we'll be there one day. It's just not us now, but I think kind of a lot of people let that or what they see get in the way of launching something really cool.
Yeah, I think you're 100% right. And I know I mentioned that question I always like to ask everybody on the podcast, and one of the most common answers to that that I hear when so many CPG brands come on the podcast is this like knee-jerk reaction I get is basically just like, understand that it's going to take 10 or 15 times as long to bring it to market, but also to scale it the way you like know that it can. It's just a slow burn with CPG, as I'm sure like you're learning. Maybe the hard way, maybe the whatever way that it is. No, it's so true. I think that perspective again is really, really important. So I appreciate you sharing that as well. And yeah, so I am curious to hear your answer to that question though. I suppose if you could go back to when this was still like kind of like an idea before you did any of your like product development, you found a formulator, you know, doing all these things. If you can go back and give yourself any one piece of advice, if you were to go through kind of that you know, pre-revenue stage again, what do you think that piece of advice would be?
It probably would be to do it cheaper. Or to think smaller scale. I think that, you know, as I said, I want to grow this into the next Poppy. And that's not without thinking about where Poppy started, which is a farmer's market. It's incredibly, I think, especially in this day and age, when there's so many brands that seemingly come out of nowhere and secure those, you know, Whole Foods, Sprouts, distribution plays, Costco even, like Gorgie the energy drink was in Costco, I think 11 months after launch, which is crazy, but they raised a $6.5 million pre-seed round. Like, I think that a lot of these things make a ton of sense in context, but it's very easy to kind of get caught up in seeing like, oh my gosh, this brand did this or this brand did that. And it's unsexy. Even myself, my girlfriend was like, you should look into a farmer's market. And I was like, that's not cool. I don't want to do that. I want to launch an Erewhon. When really, you know, there's just as much money to be made with a food truck or a table on Venice Boardwalk. Like, there's a lot of, which I'm still going to do. I'm still going to be out there Saturday mornings with my little table and my little Yeti cooler selling cans, because at the end of the day, you know, you just have to do the unsexy thing sometimes. But I feel like a lot of people kind of get in the way of thinking that they're going to be 100 on day one.
Yeah, no, it's so true. And just for you as well, just a little piece of other like context I've heard from other folks in like very similar products is a really interesting vertical I've been hearing about a lot on the podcast is folks kind of just reaching out to their colleagues that work at these like, you know, big corporate campuses in, you know, Silicon Valley and California and in New York where I am, and getting in that way where they're basically buying it to give away to their employees. And I think there's a lot of like easy ways to like pitch value with, especially with something like this, especially with the A2 protein that you have in there. It's just a fascinating concept that I think it would really open a lot of like eyes for people. I just don't think it's a vertical that enough people consider when they're trying to sell something like this. I mean, most people just kind of think about the retail like grocery stores, which is like obviously like the best case scenario, right? But I just think there's always like really creative you know, avenues to go down, you know, maybe a little bit different than working with a distributor or maybe like a grocery store. I had somebody on the podcast recently who sold date nuts who said he sells almost 100% of his product just to lounges and airports, like the Centurion American Express lounges. It's like 100% of his business. Like, it's just so fascinating.
There are a lot of things. Even Gia, their go-to-market strategy. Before the pandemic, I actually was just listening to a podcast Melanie was on yesterday, so it's top of mind, but their go-to-market strategy was pretty much entirely restaurants and bars. And then they launched March 2020, and obviously, you know, restaurants and bars weren't much of a thing for a long time after that. So there are a lot of plays, and definitely kind of looking into a lot of those other distribution channels, especially, you know, in the McKinsey offices. I would grocery shop there a lot of days. They had Diet Coke, string cheese, LaCroix, the whole thing that I just stick in my bag. So there's a lot of opportunities in offices, for sure.
Yeah, no, it's
airports
fascinating.
Definitely too. I travel a lot and love traveling, so I would love to see the products there for sure. Hotels, similarly, even like small one, mini bars. There's a lot of creative ways you can get.
Yeah, no, for sure. I love that. And I guess another question I do always like to ask as well is, you know, if we were to speak a year from now, where do you kind of see, you know, all stages of the business? I know, I remember seeing on the website, you know, the pre-order shipping is going to happen in about August. So if you were to speak it again, like a year from now, where do you kind of see things as far as like, you know, where your product is placed, like how your DTC sales are? Where do you kind of see a year from now if you were to speak again?
Yeah, I think that I see, because of course I have like the McKinsey consultant, I might forecast it all of this out. But I think it really would be, you know, D2C being probably about 20% of our business. Largely, if I can figure out this TikTok shop thing, it might end up being a lot more. But I do think I really want to prioritize in-person connection, because I really do feel it puts us above virtually every other coffee RT in the space is how good we taste. And that's not, you know, biased. We've done tests, we've done the focus groups, the whole thing. And a lot of people do, you know, say that it tastes just like the Starbucks bottled latte, bottled frappuccino. So I think that there is an opportunity to convert not only the customer who is drinking those, but also bring a new customer into the coffee aisle. So I do want to continue to have a lot of those discussions, you know, in person, be killing it at Erewhon with crazy velocities and really, you know, looking at opportunities within Southern California that make the most sense, whether it is a lot of those corporate offices. You know, we have a lot of the tech, but either here or in San Francisco, that's obviously a huge opportunity there. And thinking through what other strategic plays we could make in the near term.
No, it's amazing. And Isabel, I just want to give you an opportunity as well, just to, you know, shout out your website, any social media that anybody should know about, if somebody listening might be interested in reaching out to you for potential business partnership, or just wants to, you know, maybe place a pre-order with you guys. What's the best way to stay in touch with you all?
Yeah, so it's drink, just like drinklaurels.com, and that's our website, our social, you know, everywhere you can find us, we're Drink Laurels. And then you can reach out to me directly, isabel@drinklaurels.com.
amazing. So I just want to say thank you again for coming on. I really appreciate your passion for what you're doing. I think it's really important, and yeah, just want to wish you the best of luck and continued success in everything that you're doing, and really looking forward to staying in touch as well, and be very curious to know how things pan out for you with the rest of your pre-orders and beyond. So really looking forward to staying in touch too. Thank you again for coming on.
Yeah, thanks, Matt. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Isabel. Thanks, everybody.